February 11th, and I call to order the House Committee on Human Services and Housing. And we will not have a work session for committee bills. We have none for proposal, but just a reminder, February 20th is the deadline, so next week is the last chance, I believe. I will now open an informational meeting on the Affordability, Balance, and Choice Housing Work Group with our esteemed colleagues, Representative Reardon and Representative Parrish. Hopefully we'll be...
Or not.
You can kick it off, and hopefully she will come soon.
We work so closely together.
Yeah. You can speak for her.
Chair Kenny Geyer. My name is Representative Jeff Reardon, District 48, and glad to be here this afternoon. I just have a brief comment or two, and then we'll turn it over to the real experts in housing. But basically, we have almost all new people on your committee. So just as a backgrounder, as a result of a bill that I didn't pass in 2013 session, I was able to form, with the Speaker's support, a task force to take a look at affordable housing in the state. And it was an eye-opening experience. I'm actually very pleased that my bill didn't pass, and we were able to do this. Because I think we really learned a lot. We were able to bring to the table a lot of folks that may not have had the opportunity to share information with each other. And so the work group actually really worked on focusing on things that where there was agreement, and there were a couple of issues that we stayed away from because we were pointless. We would never reach consensus on those. That wasn't necessarily a popular approach, but I think it was very productive. We ended up with over 40 different concepts that could be pursued further to advance the cause of affordable housing. So I feel really good about those. The ones that the work group or the task force dwelled on the most, saw the greatest chance for success, had to do with two things. One was money, and one was land. And so I want to talk to you just briefly and introduce the two of those that are talking about today. One of those is House Joint Resolution 17, and this basically is designed to kind of kick out a measure to the voters and allow them to weigh in on how are we going to provide more funding for affordable housing. And so it'd be a constitutional amendment. I'll let the experts talk to you more about the details on that, but it's potentially it could come up with $100 million or so. The other bill is actually, I'm really glad we came up with this idea, but it was started out with the idea of having ODOT and Department of State Lands inventory their properties and see what might be have some potential for affordable housing. And we've had some very current information that's come up. We want to do a little bit further work, and we'll come up with some amendments. But we've found out that there's actually more of this inventory work that's being done now. We can actually figure out how to fit into some current processes in ways that we didn't know before until very recently. So I apologize that we're not going to have complete bills before you. They're totally worked, but I think you'll be delighted with the outcome when you do see those. Again, it's something that I want to reinforce how collaborative this process was, how we have much more solid understanding about what can be done. And one thing I didn't mention is kind of the size of the problem, and I'll close with that thought is we probably, and I had to squeeze this information out, is we probably have 50,000 units of affordable housing that are needed in this state. And it's not just a Portland metro area problem. We had people from Bend, from the coast that spoke eloquently about the problems associated with the lack of housing and what that meant to a family that maybe working minimum wage jobs, and they're having to commute long distances because they couldn't get housing near where they work. So those are the kind of problems, again, statewide, and we just need to really continue working on it. I think these two bills that we're talking about today, try to get some money and try to find more land, will be a step in the right direction. So.
Thank you, Chair Kinnegeyer, members of the committee. For the record, Julie Parrish, State Rep from House District 37. And you know, I just have to say, I think some of the best legislation that comes before us is when you have kind of odd couple pairings of folks who, you know, maybe don't agree on everything, but put them in a room together, bring in a bunch of people on all sides of the issue, and just really, you know, spend some time fleshing out all of the problems. And so first, I want to just start off by thanking all of the housing advocates and the building community and the government folks who came from, you know, basically the furthest corners of the state to participate and showed up on a really regular basis. I think that there are so many great, thoughtful hearts in this conversation on all sides of the issue. And, you know, sometimes you hear your business community vilified because, you know, it's all about, you know, greedy, evil corporations. Our business community, I think, came and really was thoughtful and engaged in this because at the heart of it, nobody wants to see somebody not have a place to live. And we know that a lot of the housing issues that Oregonians face who are low income, communities of color, rural poor, that they are struggling with, really are rooted in a lot of the other social service issues and education issues tie into those aspects of not having stable housing. And so, you know, we also touched, while we touched, you know, and really are bringing you bills that are more global in the housing universe. I do want the committee to understand, too, we did talk some about, you know, what's housing look like for people who are coming out of corrections? What does senior housing look like? What does homeless housing look like? And we know that within the housing conversation, there are a lot of niche kind of subgroups of people who have specific areas of need. These bills don't necessarily address any of the niche conversations around, you know, particular demographics who have housing needs. But we think that the concepts that we're bringing forward start by giving us that kind of bigger infusion of potentially dollars and public policy thinking about how we do housing. I think it's also important to note that, as you know, some of our conversations included things like, you know, what are the other kind of determinants around housing that are challenging? It's poor performing schools, lack of transportation, food deserts, you know, immediacy of jobs that somebody doesn't have to get on a bus and, you know, go from one end of the city to another, and it takes an hour and a half to go get into a job that's not going to advance people forward. And so how are we thoughtful about housing and also the bigger aspects of all of those conversations? And we can't just take our poor people and say, we're just going to stuff you over in this part of town and, you know, and good luck to you. Like, so I think that there was a very thoughtful dialogue, and we also broke out into subgroups on issues. So we had our big group, and then for a small period of time over the summer, we broke into these kind of subcommittee groups and came back and I think just had a really thorough process. And you heard Jeff say, you know, we probably came up with over 40 concepts. The first 25 or 26 of them, when we did our little sticky dot process, you know, actually have no contention around them at all. And we're only bringing you the first few of those concepts. I think there's a commitment from Jeff and I, particularly since this was not a task force. And, you know, for those who are new, kind of the difference between a task force and a work group, you know, task force, we legislate, you're going to go and come up with a defined outcome based on a piece of legislation. And a work group gives us a lot more flexibility. There's not a piece of legislation that is mandating that we show up at some meeting somewhere, we get assigned by the speaker. So so I think a work group actually provides for particularly some of these difficult conversations, a better opportunity to really, you know, take the whiteboard out and color on it and say, how do we solve some of Oregon's most difficult and pressing problems? And we did, I think we got there in terms of the actual thought process. And so, you know, there are other housing bills that are certainly going to probably come before our committee this session. I actually have one around senior property taxes, and I know the inclusionary zoning, which was the issue that brought this whole work group together. I know that there's a bill around that this session, and my kind of hope is that you know, as a committee and as a body, that we focus on kind of the issues that have nobody's contention around them, and really make sure that we get to yes on those, like, as you know, in a very nonpartisan kind of way. Jeff and I, since it is a work group and we didn't have an end date, I think have told the committee and been very clear that we're committed to meet during session, we're committed to meet after session, like, until all of those concepts can come forward. No one silver bullet bill or concept or philosophical, you know, here's how we should do housing, like, not one single thing is going to solve all those problems. And I think what we saw, everything from, you know, land use to funding to the difficulty to coordinate a bunch of you know, federal funds with state funds with any local grants and land banking, like, all of these things individually, if we can get to and have consistent legislation that comes forward to bring those ideas into public policy, I think, you know, we get a dozen or so of these things passed in the next few years. That's when we start to really make it a positive impact on affordable housing, because every little piece of it, I think, has a component. And so, you know, I just appreciate, you know, working with Jeff. We certainly are, like I said, one of those political odd couples, but at the end of the day, have a lot of heart for the issue, both of us. And I know Jeff sees this in his community. You know, I've got affordable housing issues in my community that maybe look a little different than, you know, what's going on in Southeast Portland or Northeast Portland or the rural part of the state. You know, when a half an acre of land or, you know, a lot is hundreds of thousands of dollars. Well, you know, how do we solve those problems and deal with the NIMBY stuff? And so it's a really complex conversation, and I just really want to press on the committee. Not one single thing is going to solve the housing issues in our state, but in concert with a whole bunch of different elements of this, we might actually be able to crack the nut on this and find ways to make sure that people have a place to live, because if they are stable in their home, it is the foundation for everything else around hunger and education and job security. And so I think, you know, you'll be excited by what we're doing here, and hopefully we'll get some support and get these out to the rest of our members of our colleagues and get them on their way. So thank you. That's we'll take questions. Great. If not, we'll do our thing and let the real experts come up.
I have a comment.
Comment?
I'd just like to say I know I won't have much more opportunity to say that I am a rookie and I am still learning, but I really applaud the bipartisanship. I really applaud the vision of a long-term solution and the fact that, yeah, one piece isn't going to do it. And when you talk about being a few years out, it may be many years out, but if we're consistent and we stay with it and we stay focused on what needs to be done, which is the right thing for people, we'll get there. Okay. But I really appreciate what you've presented today and what you've said, and that, again, we're not going to do it overnight. It's going to take a while. So thank you so much.
Jeff will be glad for the break. I think he thinks I talk too much. But it's been fun. And
not just Jeff thinks that.
I'm sure.
Oops, sorry.
No. So, you know, but we're continued to be committed to the work. So thank you.
So before you leave,
yes,
thank you very much. I know it's been a lot of hard work. I'm eager to hear some of the concepts now and into the future. Are you going to want to testify on those two particular concepts that we have?
No, I'm going to hop
back
agenda
up.
And I have other meetings as well.
Okay.
We have really smart people back here.
That's right.
Okay. So I will close the information.
We're just the window dressing.
I don't need to close that?
No, you can leave.
Just open the public hearing?
Okay.
No,
thank you.
I'm not going to testify.
But for the others, for John.
Nope, they're going to. They're going to come up under this informational meeting.
Oh, okay.
So you just called Janet.
Okay. Can I call Janet Bird and John Chandler up under this informational hearing?
Just him.
You are major parts of this work group, so thank you for
maybe we
all you've done to date.
To each other. Sure.
She doesn't have cooties.
This is another odd couple.
Go ahead.
So, Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee, my name is Janet Bird, and I'm the Executive Director of Neighborhood Partnerships, which is a statewide nonprofit that works to move people into opportunity. And you'll see me often probably when we talk about housing issues wearing my other chair, my other hat, which is convener of the Oregon Housing Alliance. But today I'm here representing Neighborhood Partnerships. So I had the opportunity to work with the representatives and John Chandler and convene this work group starting last January. And wanted to just summarize, we did report briefly in December, and so we loaded up on OLIS the report that was given to the committee in December, so that's available to you. We also updated the final page of that report, which is the recommendations, and that was those are updated and available to you today. I wanted to just, I'll be quick because I know you've got other things and we do have the other two bills at the end, but I wanted to touch on just a few things. Representative Parrish referenced that, you know, the goal really was and what brought this disparate group of strange bedfellows together is that we recognize that housing is really the bedrock on which everything else rests, and that we can't be successful with any of our other goals as a state unless we address this very complex and pretty dramatic problem of housing affordability. As the representatives mentioned, we heard from folks from all parts of the state. We heard from Pendleton and Bend and Grants Pass and Lincoln County and the city of Portland and the city of Eugene. And what we saw were themes that, you know, it's very different. The housing crisis in Bend looks very different than the housing crisis in Portland. But there are common themes, and we sort of tugged and pulled at some common threads of tools that we think would make a difference. And we put those kind of in four categories of what we need broadly, and started to put together this long list of possible steps that could be taken. So the four broad categories are money. We need money. We need subsidy into properties that will bring the cost down for the eventual renters or owners. And that needs to go in just as cash, as grants, as equity. We also need low-cost debt that's available to developers. And we have a couple mechanisms that are used in state financing or in the financing of affordable housing that provide that debt. But we need to expand those or get more creative with them. We also need land, and one of the real focuses of this committee was that intersection of where housing is located and where opportunity is located, and we really need land in those sort of opportunity communities. So we came up with a couple strategies and ideas for identifying land and holding it for future use as housing, and you'll hear more about that, one of those ideas, later in this hearing. We heard particularly from the city of Eugene, which has had a very aggressive land banking program for about 20 years dedicated to affordable housing. Eugene is probably the city that's been most successful in the state in deconcentrating poverty and deconcentrating the location of affordable housing, something that's, again, really important if we're thinking about locating housing near schools, near services, near transportation and other opportunities. And then finally, there are going to be a lot of ways that we can tweak policy, and you'll hear a lot of those as session goes through, lots of talk about tax abatements, et cetera. You'll hear conversation about zoning and other proposals. I wanted to talk briefly before I let Mr. Chandler talk about two things that you aren't going to see legislatively, but which are moving forward as a result of the work group. One, we also talked a lot during the course of the work group about a little bit of a disconnect that exists within state government. We have a robust land use planning system, and we have a state housing agency. They don't necessarily work together to check to be sure that all communities are meeting their housing goals, particularly around affordability. The connection is not as robust as it ought to be. We had originally a proposal to ask the State Housing Agency to report annually to the legislature on progress in improving that connection. They asked us to remove the bill. They are moving forward on that independently of legislative action. So we're really excited to see that work progress as the months go forward. They've brought on new capacity to help them do that within Housing and Community Services. The other thing I'll just briefly talk about is the Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credit, which is one of those mechanisms to provide low-cost debt. We had anticipated that we would need to come in and request an increase in the capacity of that tax credit. Housing and Community Services convened a work group that looked at different strategies, and we're confident that they've figured out a way administratively to more fully utilize the capacity that currently exists. So that won't be coming forward in this legislative session. We do anticipate in future sessions we'll need to improve that tool. So with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Chandler. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. John Chandler. I'm with the Oregon Home Builders Association, which represents, used to be represented a lot more, but about 2,800 builder, developer, remodelers throughout the state, and we do most of the housing that's built on the for-profit side. This has been a tremendously valuable exercise that you've heard about, and I won't belabor the point other than to mention, at the risk of sounding old as I appear, I've been in this building underfoot for 25 years. This is the most significant conversation we've had about housing in my experience. Which is huge, and one of my beliefs is that part of the reason we haven't had we still have an affordable housing problem, notwithstanding Goal 10, notwithstanding the housing agency and other tools available to us, is simply that lack of attention. It is a very complicated process. It's a very complicated problem. It's a very difficult problem. It involves, like Ms. Burgess said, you need to find money, you need to find land, you need to find agents. It's a lot of moving parts, and it's very easy to say that looks hard. Let's do something else, or let's figure out an easy answer to which there isn't one. If it was easy, we'd have done this a long time ago. And I really want to credit not only the work group, Representative Parrish, Representative Reardon, and their good work, but prior to that, Director Van Vliet of the Housing Agency. She convened the first time, again, in my experience, a meeting of the Housing Agency with the for-profit housing sector, because normally we didn't talk to each other. Bad on all of us. She took the initiative. We need to have those meetings more often, but we at least had that first discussion. And even before that, another effort that Janet Bird and I were involved with, dealing with the document fee, recording fee, back, three or four sessions ago?
In 2009.
Where we sat down, the for-profit side, sat down with the not-for-profit side, and talked about the fact, and we found out, not to any great surprise, that all of us had the same exact problems in terms of permitting, in terms of financing, in terms of NIMBYism, in terms of the barriers to housing. That didn't result in any particular legislation on those topics. It did result in some additional funding tools. So I think we have started over the last few years a conversation. I'm very optimistic that the conversation that we're reporting to you about today will continue, will result in some legislation for your consideration this session, not just in this committee but in others, but in also, I think, a commitment on the part of the people that were involved, and hopefully others, to continue this discussion going forward and to look at a variety of policy options. Whether it be developer side, whether it be financial side, whether it be land side, whether it be regulatory side, doesn't matter. The philosophy we had in this work group was everything was on the table. Mm-hmm. Not everything was going to go forward if it was controversial or didn't work or didn't have enough support, but everything was on the table because none of us know how to fix all the angles of this problem. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinatingly complex, it's fascinatingly difficult, and I would submit to you it's fascinatingly important. And the one thing I believe that this work group, the bill last session that was referred to, the inclusionary zoning bill, and I usually have to wear a crucifix and garlic when I talk about that. I left it at home, so don't take advantage of me. What came out of the hearing on that bill, and we'll talk about inclusionary zoning or we won't talk about it depending on how things play out later, but it was a bunch of discussions about, as Representative Parrish mentioned, about gentrification, about transit headways, about concentrations of poverty, about communities of color, about other. It was a fascinating. It had nothing to do with the bill. It had to do with the issues surrounding the bill. That's what I think gave rise to this work group, was a recognition, certainly on my part and others, that we might have a critical mass of people willing to actually dive into this issue, root around, figure out what works, try things, try something else if that didn't work, and to push the ball collectively forward. It's overdue. I'm excited about it. I'm committed to working on it personally. I think Ms. Bird is as well. And I would hope that you will help us as we, not only on the bills in front of you, but as we talk about this issue generally throughout this session and going forward. Thank you for your time. Be happy to take any questions.
That's great. Thank you. Are there any general questions about the work group context?
Over here.
Yep, just real quick. So, you know, I thanked the folks who came, but really, I think, and I don't know if Jeff beat me to it because I'm sorry I was late, but the fact is, you know, Janet and John are just workhorses on this, and another political odd couple pairing certainly. but it was really clear to me that, you know, they've both been around this conversation a lot longer than Jeff and I have been, and the guidance and the work, and you just like I don't think there's gifts big enough that we could buy them for the time and the consideration that they put into this. So just really want to thank you both for being, you know, slavishly dedicated to trying to solve this and bring all points of view to the table and basically herd cats in a very difficult conversation. So thank you.
If I might, Madam Chair, members, just to clarify, Janet did the work. I was just decorative for the most part.
Eye candy.
It's a curse.
Yeah. Okay. So with that, I'm going to close informational hearing. But wait, if you would like to be the first to testify, if you have any testimony, I'm going to be now opening a public hearing on House Bill 2620, first of the
I will
the proposed.
Ms.
Okay.
Bird to carry on.
All right. So Janet, and then I'll also call up Paul Mather and Mary Kyle McCurdy on this bill. And that's the only public testimony that I see that's signed up. Is anyone else going to be speaking to this? Okay. Janet, would you like to keep going?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Janet Bird, Executive Director of Neighborhood Partnerships.
And to start, would you like our committee administrator to just briefly read what it is? Yep. Unless you know it so well, you can do it right. Let us know.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2620 directs Oregon Department of Transportation to identify land for potential residential use, directs ODOT to inventory department-owned lands, requires a report of inventory finding to Legislative Assembly on or before October 1st, 2016. There's no revenue impact. It may have a fiscal impact, though no statement has been issued.
Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, this bill is aimed again at improving the coordination and communication among state agencies that that will help us develop the kinds of communities that we want to have, more inclusive with housing better located in communities of opportunity. One of the things that became very clear over the course of the work group is that in some communities, the land that would be most ideal for affordable housing development is either not for sale, it's too expensive, but in many communities we were actually hearing that the land is really just not available for sale, that that people may be holding on to it or not wanting to part with it, or not wanting to part with it for affordable housing uses. And we heard from a couple communities about kind of innovative strategies that they had used that had successfully helped them identify land. And one of those was looking at the little tiny scraps of land that come when you build a roundabout. This was from the city of Bend. And a successful effort to create affordable housing using those little scraps of land. And that was really kind of the germ of this idea, was, you know, to look at where else in state government there might be land that was surplus to those purposes, suitable for affordable housing development, residential development, so, you know, well located, and to increase the communication between the state agencies. we have become aware, you'll see that I have company today, that that there may be better ways to do it than the way the original bill was drafted. And so we will be coming back to you with amendments, I'm quite certain. But that's the concept, that we want to increase that coordination, that communication. And, you know, it's not that we want to make ODOT give land away or any of that. You know, we expect that there has to be some fair compensation both with this, and you'll see a similar bill coming before you that looks at land that's owned and held by the Department of State Lands to benefit the Common School Fund. We really are interested in just figuring out where there's coordination, not using this as a sneaky way to transfer resources. So thank you.
Thank you, Janet.
Apologize for that, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Paul Mather, Highway Division Administrator for ODOT. I'm usually next door at the Transportation Committee. I think this is the first time I've been to this committee. So glad to share with you a few thoughts on 2620. The bill would require ODOT to conduct an inventory of its real property, determine its surplus, the department's needs into the future. Currently, ODOT is required by law to sell property that is surplus to its needs. ODOT routinely reviews properties to determine whether the parcel is surplus for future needs. We generate about $9 million a year, either through sale of property or through our leases on our property. It's important to note, and we had a conversation yesterday with Representative Parrish, Reardon yesterday, and he alluded to this, but it's important to note that the Constitution requires us to return any of those sales or lease generated revenue back to the highway fund. And so whether we lease or sell the property, we've got to make the highway trust fund whole. Talk a little bit about the process that we go through when we do have surplus property. Currently, when we identify a piece of property as surplus, I think the roundabout is a good example where we're buying a square piece of property and we may put a round project in the middle of it and we have remnants that are left over and we identify those. Our process is to go through DAS and offer it to other state agencies first. Local government also has a shot at it before we move on and offer that to the general public in our process. We have about 112,000 pieces of property, little remnants that we have. Mm-hmm. Some of those are zoned property properly for housing. Some of them are not. It would be quite an undertaking for us to go, as the bill is required us to go through each one of those 112 pieces of property and make a determination on it. We don't, in our records, don't keep track of the zoning of the property, so we don't have that in our databases. That zoning changes periodically through the life of the property. Obviously, when we go through the sale process, we do end up identifying that the zoning. Yes, going through that process with all that property, not sure there's a lot of value in that. What we talked with Representative Reardon about yesterday, our suggestion was really to go back and look at that process that I described. Is there a piece in that process where we could have a step in the process for other organizations, housing organizations, others with the interest of this bill, to have them have a notification process? They were notified, maybe not just of ODOT property, but all the state property as it goes through that sales process, and see if we do have an opportunity. That seemed to be a more productive way to meet the goals of the bill. And we, like I said, we already have a process out there. It'd be a matter of just modifying that process to include that additional step. So, yeah, unless there's questions.
I can understand how you said 112,000 approximately properties. Yep. I can understand that would be a lot to go through. However, do you know physically where they are?
Madam Chair, Representative Taylor, yes. We know where all our properties are.
Okay.
We have records. We have records of all our property.
So the issue, I'm trying to understand what the hurdle would be. So you know where they are. You have some data points on them. But the data points that are missing and what would be involved.
We'd have to go back through each property and check physically the zoning of the property and whether it's appropriate for housing or not. So if it's a farm forest piece of property,
Is it, you know, inside urban growth boundary? Is it something that even be interested from a housing standpoint? It would be quite a process to go through. The bill requires every one of our properties. Now, we have a pretty good sense of our properties, and I think we could, you know, narrow those down pretty significantly, maybe to something less than 20,000 pieces of property that are within urban growth boundary or so forth that we could go through. But again, I think this process that I described is a more productive way to do it. We're already aggressively looking for those pieces of property that we would get rid of anyway. For example, some of our property that we do have are for future alignments of highway projects. We may have acquired right away for the full build out of a project, but only had construction money to build a portion of that money. We wouldn't want to sell that piece of property for the future. But the remnants piece, when I talked about, you know, the roundabout and the square pieces that we'd want to get rid of, that would make sense. And so those are actively going through the process all the time. It wouldn't be like, oh, we discover a piece of property we'd kind of forgotten about. It's actively going through the process. And again, I think that's where we'd make more benefits in the process to make sure that we didn't sell a piece of property to a, you know, private individual, and it should have been or could have been used for an opportunity for affordable housing.
Thank you. Other questions?
Yeah. Chair Kingar, I think this would be a very valuable process and a point of data to corroborate that is that Bend Lapine Schools just did this last year and found a major piece of property they didn't even realize they had. So I bet that exists also in several state agencies, considering the number of holdings you have.
I'm curious whether how many of the 112,000, roughly how many do you sell every year? Because what you were suggesting is that those that go for sale could go onto some kind of notification process. But roughly how many are sold every year?
Madam Chair, I had that number right in front of me. It's a sizable number. It's hundreds of pieces of property that we go through every year from at least either recognized through lease or through sale of property. Like, to generate that $9 million, it's a significant number of properties.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Thank you. Mary Kyle.
Good afternoon, Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee. My name is Mary Kyle McCurdy, Policy Director for 1000 Friends of Oregon, and I know you don't often see us here before this committee either, so I just give a little bit of background. Oregon's Land Use Planning Program has 19 statewide goals. Goal 10 is the housing goal, and it requires, among other things, that all communities plan and zone their land to ensure provision of housing for all, including affordable housing. And we at 1000 Friends have been working to ensure this is a robustly implemented goal since for all 40 years that we've been around. And I share with John Chandler some frustration with that over the years. You've heard what the bill would do, and we share the concern that the breadth of the bill's scope is so wide that it would be unwieldy, impractical, and too expensive. And we've spoken with Representative Reardon and with Janet Byrd and believe we can agree on amendments. We recommend that the bill narrow the inventory of ODOT lands to those that are inside urban growth boundaries, urban reserves, urban communities, and that be the inventory that, or something along those lines, and that the focus be on finding land that's appropriate for affordable housing. The state of Oregon, as you've heard in the earlier description, commits a great deal of, financial resources. You can say whether it's a great deal for the provision of affordable housing through a variety of programs. But land already owned by the state is an incredibly unique resource to hold on to, and that if it's appropriate for affordable housing, can be used for land banking or for affordable land trust or in other ways to provide that resource that's already in hand for provision of affordable housing. We look forward to working with the proponents on this bill to bring you an amended version that we can all support. Thank you.
That's great. Questions for Mayor Kyle? Good. Well, we look forward to hearing amendments. So no one else testifying on that one? Yes, please stay. I'm going to close the public hearing on 2620 and open a public hearing on HJR 17. Other people, anyone else testifying? Janet is the only one, so yours.
Thank you.
Do we have another one person? Oh, come on up.
I'm going to keep my polluted self over here. I got the Capitol crud.
Oh. Madam Chair, once again, for the record, my name is Janet Byrd. I'm the Executive Director of Neighborhood Partnerships. So I'm here today to talk to you about House Joint Resolution House Joint Resolution 17. And again, this is a concept that's coming out of the ABC work group. We had those four tools, that categories of tools that we're interested in. There's money, cash into projects. You may all be aware that the governor has proposed $100 million of general obligation bonding. That would act as cash money into projects. That's not what this is. This is a debt mechanism, a low-cost debt mechanism. It's an amendment, a fairly minor, actually, amendment, if it wasn't to the Constitution, which makes it a bigger deal. There is currently in the Constitution a provision that allows Oregon Housing and Community Services to issue general obligation bonds to provide housing for people who are elderly and people with disabilities. We would like to expand that eligible category, those eligible categories, to include residents with low incomes, so low incomes regardless of how old they are or whether they have disabilities. Again, this is a debt mechanism. It's a general obligation bond that would act as a revenue bond. There are provisions in statute that require it to act as a revenue bond. We have seen instances in Oregon's history that this has been a very valuable tool. In this current environment, it's not going to make a huge difference in the debt cost because interest rates are low. That's not always going to be true. This has been sort of a source of annoyance for some housing advocates for a long time. So, again, it's a tool in the toolbox. If it wasn't a constitutional amendment, it would probably be a fairly minor definitional change. I'm happy to talk more, answer questions about that.
Jen, do you have a question?
Yes, Chair Kinnegar. One quick question. You mentioned expanding from kind of what we look at as the Medicare or senior disabled population to low income. What could you define to low income?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Hayden. The bill says below 80% of area median income, and that's a sort of standard definition that's used in affordable housing. It's used by the Federal Housing and Urban Development. It typically we see kind of an equivalency across the state. 80% of median income is about 200% of the federal poverty level, which may be a measure you are slightly more familiar with.
Yes, thank you.
Roughly $45,000 a year for a family of four. Okay. Across the state. It varies by county.
So I have one question for you, and it's actually for either of you. Do you have a guess of what this would cost? Because it has to go onto the ballot. There's people ready to step up and support a campaign around it to the extent that there are any costs?
Madam Chair, that is an excellent question. I think that, again, constitutional amendments would go to the ballot in November of 2016. I think that given that we're having a conversation about other bonding mechanisms, that'll become clearer over the course of the session. It may be that this is not something that's urgent to be decided this week.
Thank you.
This is probably the first time she'll hear me say that. Ditto. But I am Gwen Baldwin. I represent Multifamily Northwest. We are a provider of rental homes. And we our members actually represent over 25,000 units of affordable rental housing, in addition to our total membership portfolio in Oregon, all across Oregon, and Southwest Washington of about 150,000 units. So we have actually a pretty good sort of range of understanding of the experiences. And I think that one of the things that is really critical in any conversation of that housing is being realistic and honest and pragmatic about what the barriers are. And that's one of the things that I really appreciate about the work that Janet and John and all the representatives and the members of this work group do is, what are those actual things, not the philosophical issues, not the tactics, but what are the things, the barriers? And one of them is financing and having the right tools to be able to finance when the market's hot when it's not so hot. And so we support HJ Res 17 for that reason. It is an important and a smart tool to add to the mix. It's not a silver bullet. It's not going to solve everything for every circumstance, but it's a good thing to have in the mix.
So I know that having the word indebtedness, I think, probably has to end up on the ballot language. It's a big damper, as we've seen with the Opportunity Fund and others. So I think that's one of the challenges there. But any further thoughts on that?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think, you know, again, the difference is that this is a general obligation bond that really acts as a revenue bond. Yeah. And so it's a incremental difference in interest rate. It's, you know, it's not a huge difference. And in this interest rate climate, frankly, it's not as valuable a tool as some other things would be. We often see interest rates go up, and that may happen in the near future, in which case this would become a more essential tool to have available to us.
Great. Any other? Yes, Representative Wheeler.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm very supportive of solving this problem, and I may sound like a broken record to my committee members, but I have great hesitation to try to start solving a problem before we clearly identify what's causing it. And I'm yet to really I don't think we've nailed this down on what's causing this problem. And I encourage you to work on that.
Was that a question?
Yeah. I think you did do a lot of work on looking at lack of land, lack of financing, I think that's a great question and it's a good opportunity to.
Madam Chair, Representative Bueller, I heard you ask that question on Monday as well. I think what I would say is that there's no the answer to that question for Lincoln City is perhaps different than the answer to the question in your community in Bend. I think that there are some trends. You know, we see in migration, we live in an incredibly beautiful place, and so we see people moving here. We see that in your community, we've had huge foreclosures. We know that there are still what people call zombie foreclosures, that there are vacant properties that have not gone through the foreclosure process. When the foreclosure crisis hit, we saw rental vacancy rates go low because people were doubling up, were scooping up any available rental unit. So I don't think we quite understand the depth of that. There are very, very smart people who I think have ideas in different communities, but there's not one answer for what has caused this problem across the state. And just in that same way, there's not one answer to how we fix this problem. I think we need a variety of responses.
Follow-up question, Chair?
Yes, please.
Point well taken. And so I don't think there's anything prohibiting us from trying to catalog that in different communities. I think, you know, these are complex problems and may require, you know, a variety of answers. But I don't think there's nothing that prevents us from taking that approach and finding community-specific solutions to this problem.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Representative Bueller, if I may, I think that was, again, part of the idea of this, what we call the housing lens, the idea that Housing and Community Services should work closely with Department of Land Conservation and Development, as well as other state agencies, to look at how successful communities were being in meeting their community affordable housing goals and having that big picture statewide look at whether there were commonalities and solutions that could be advanced. That was really the motivator behind that concept of Housing Lens. And again, we're very excited that Housing and Community Services has staffed up to start to do that work and has engaged Department of Land Conservation and Development in those conversations.
One more question? And correct me if I'm wrong, but you don't think our land use planning process is contributing to the lack of affordable housing?
Chair Kenny Geyer, Representative Bueller, I am a huge advocate of our land use system. I do think that there are some things that we could look at. I'm particularly concerned about the impact of neighborhood and community opposition on the ability to develop affordable housing. We heard horrifying tales of what could really only be opposition based on race or economic standing. And so I think that's a huge issue, and that's also noted in the recommendations. I'm an ardent supporter of our land use system and the goals in that, but I think housing affordability needs to be looked at very closely. We're clearly not meeting our goal 10 goals.
Okay, Representative Gallegos.
Yeah, I just want to thank you for all your work and really the representative as well. You know, the thing that I'm impressed with is how the housing community, both profit and nonprofit, have come together and really tried to wrestle with this very complex issue problem. But I think, as was said early on, just even recognizing the fundamental issue that housing asset really determines in terms of dealing with poverty, dealing with the economic health of our community. So I really do applaud the work group, the whole housing community. I think you've done a wonderful job in the last few years of, as I said, really trying to work on this issue. So thank you.
Thank you
very much. Oh, one more?
Well,
one more, and then we'll
and
try to
it's
get
more
on.
Of a little bit of a response to Rep. Bueller, and you know, we certainly had the land use conversation as part of this discussion, and certainly builders and the folks who actually are doing the boots on the ground of getting trying to find the land, trying to make sure that the land kind of you know qualifies in the community and deals with the NIMBY stuff, trying to make sure it'll you know qualify for funding, and then you know actually things like permitting and streamlining of permitting is a huge problem. SDC charges came up as an issue in terms of you know trying to get services there that can sometimes feel artificially expensive and drive up the cost of affordable housing units. So I just want to make sure that you know I know Janet's a big you know land use supporter in the way it's currently structured, but I think the committee also did recognize that it does present some unique challenges around affordable spaces that people can have access to, where you can do multifamily units or you know, or situations where you're trying to build single units where somebody can actually then take that over at a you know, on a plan that would help them move into home ownership. And so you know, our building community has certainly talked about that during the whole process. We had members of the Home Builders Association who actually do build affordable units, and they build them in Portland. Justin Wood was in that mix. And he certainly is like, look, you know, it is a challenge to find those. But it's not just about finding the affordable land. It's about then getting it through the entire process of permits and, you know, sewer and water hookups and like all this other stuff that goes into getting those units developed. So I don't think that the housing group is unaware that land use is certainly a piece, but again, it goes back to it's a piece of what's mm-hmm. driving the costs, but not the only problem that we're facing.
Okay, well, that's a great segue into the next. So I'm going to close the public hearing on HJR 17 and open the public hearing on 2442, which is kind of the big omnibus reorganization of housing and community services. And I'll call up Margaret Van Vliet and Aubrey Dixon, please. Do I have to do it again?
No, you're good. Just let me.
Yes, and we'll have our committee administrator read the bill, summary of the bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2442 replaces existing State Housing Council with Oregon Housing Stability Council, abolishes Advisory Committee on Energy and Community Development Incentive Advisory Board, and transfers authority to Oregon Housing Stability Council, abolishes Interagency Council on Hunger and Homelessness, and transfers responsibility to Oregon Housing Stability Council, transfers responsibility for Oregon Hunger Relief Task Force to Department of Human Services. There's no subsequent referral. There's no revenue impact. There may be a fiscal impact, but no statement has been issued yet.
And just a quick note, we have five people after you that have signed up, if anyone has not yet signed up, wants to. And this committee is meeting Monday and Wednesdays until 5. We have at least until 5 in order to take off every other Friday as long as possible. And so don't worry, people will all get heard.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Margaret Van Vliet. I'm the Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services. I'm very glad to be here today to talk to you about House Bill 2442. As you've heard me describe, the agency that I run over the last couple of years has gone through a major transformation effort. We've examined every aspect of our business, from policy and governance to service delivery model to our fiscal underpinnings and our relationship with community partners. And so the bill before you really is the result of a lot of that work, where and it will help us align our policy and governance work so that it is more cohesive and more integrated, and really is a very central part of the agency redesign that we've been working on for a couple of years now. What this bill does is take the existing State Housing Council statute and responsibilities, elevates it, sort of cleans it up, adds some things to it, and expands the membership. So let me just tell you quickly kind of how we use and how the Housing Council relates to the agency work today, and then how this will, I think, impact our work going forward. So today the State Housing Council has 7 members appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. They have a variety of duties, but the primary duties are to approve loans and grants that we make with public funds, and to provide some budget oversight and policy oversight over primarily housing finance funds. Historically, they have not had any purview over, for example, the community services funds or the housing stabilization resources that I spoke with you about on Monday. So this would serve to align those policy bodies, those policy functions in this new council. It would not, however, importantly, change the existing responsibilities of the Community Action Partnership of Oregon, or CAPO, and you're going to hear from a CAPO representative today. They have a specific set of responsibilities to oversee some of those community services related funds that are sort of anti-poverty in nature, if you will. And so what this bill will do for us is sort of align those and have the two bodies really work together so that we can begin to have a statewide conversation about housing policy from the whole continuum. And we're really convinced that that is something the agency needs to be able to deploy its resources as effectively as possible. You heard that it removes the Advisory Committee on Energy. This committee has done some important work in the past. We don't want to lose that valuable input on the role that energy assistance programs can play in providing stable housing for folks. And so we receive federal funds that require us to have some kind of community advisory function. So we're going to make sure that the new council is able to perform those functions either with added membership or a subcommittee structure. And that's been important to our partners, and so we are committed to making sure that happens. You heard that it removes the Interagency Council on Hunger and Homelessness and gives responsibility for those functions to the Housing Stability Council. Again, sort of, we don't want to not do that work. We just want to have it at one table instead of several separate tables. Transfers the Oregon Hunger Task Force to the Department of Human Services. Separately in our budget, the programs, the food security programs that currently run through our agency are proposed to be moved to DHS, so this would align in that way as well. And then there are a couple of obsolete bodies, one of which is the Community Development Incentive Advisory Board, and it has some outdated responsibilities, so it just removes those pieces. So there's a lot of technical changes. But we think that the technical changes really will serve to make their work more effective and in turn help guide the agency in its work. There are some dash 2 amendments. These are, I think, minor in nature. I'm just going to quickly mention them to you. One of the amendments
removes a limitation on what the Housing Stability Council can comment on in regard to the agency budget and adds some authority to provide policy direction and a financial plan. This has been important for a lot of reasons to our partners. We're very happy to make sure that we have good fiscal oversight on the part of the council. It also gives the council the ability to review and comment on a state housing plan prior to its issuance. We think that makes good sense and is very much in alignment with the direction we want to go. It specifically asked the council to develop policies to address geographic and racial disparities, as well as policies to ensure funds help meet a variety of other statewide priorities, again, consistent with what we've been talking about. Requests that the governor, in appointing his members, give consideration to geographic distribution and a range of expertise in housing programs and services to people in poverty. Gives both the Housing Council, the Housing Stability Council and CAPO oversight over energy assistance programs and homeless assistance programs, and provides that the council will receive advice from CAPO regarding federal anti-poverty programs. So these amendments have been worked out very carefully with our partners. You're going to hear from them in a few minutes, but we think this is all very good and very much in keeping with the direction that we want to go. Before I turn it over to my colleague, I want to note that we have very much agreed and are excited for CAPO and the Oregon Opportunity Network we've pledged to them that once the bill has gone into effect, we will engage in a process to create a council charter that will address how the council defines housing stability. And this has been a point of conversation, so we want to get to that with the benefit of our partners, and how it will hold itself accountable to its statutorily named role and report to the legislature. And I think that's a good way to make sure over time these new themes are sustainable. And we are also working with the Hunger Task Force and the Department of Human Services on a couple of additional minor amendments that they've asked for. We don't see any issues with those, and so we'll be back with amendments that help clean up some of the hunger and food security pieces of it. So with that, I would like to turn it over to the current Housing Council Chair, Aubrey Dixon, has agreed to come talk to you as well. So if that's all right, Madam Chair, I'll turn it over to him.
Thank you, Margaret. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, my name is Aubrey Dixon, and I am the current chair of the Oregon State Housing Council. My day job is I'm a vice president for community development banking with KeyBank. I joined the Housing Council in June of 2012 and was appointed and confirmed as chair on September 2014, and officially presided over my first meeting in November. As Margaret noted, maybe for a little bit of background, the Oregon State Housing Council was established in 1971, and obviously was charged with meeting the tremendous needs for the provision of affordable housing for low-income Oregonians. Again, as Margaret mentioned, you know, we're charged in our role is really to ensure the carrying out of the provisions set forth in ORS 456.561, which is, again, the review, approval of loans, grants, and funding requests and awards, and ORS 456.571. Which develop policies to aid in the stimulation and increasing the supply of housing for persons and families of lower income, as well as advising OHCS, the governor, legislative assembly, other state agencies and local governments concerning local, state, federal legislation or rules that affect the cost and supply of housing. Personally, I joined the council for two reasons, and these two reasons I feel you make me uniquely qualified to serve in this capacity. One, as a practitioner in the affordable housing industry, I wanted the opportunity to play a greater role in shaping the direction of affordable housing finance by using my expertise to help and provide solutions for lack of affordable housing and the struggle to end homelessness in our great state. And secondly, to me, probably more importantly, I'm a first-generation Oregonian that happens to be a product of the very housing that Oregon Housing and the Housing Council have worked diligently to provide and preserve throughout the state of Oregon. Had it not been for federal, state, and local programs that assist low-income families obtain safe, decent, affordable housing, my single mother of two would not have been able to afford a decent place to raise her boys. And I would not be standing here, so I should say sitting here before you today. It is because of my passion, conviction, personal testimony for housing choice and opportunity, the fact that I am an example of what this very housing can provide, I can credibly rebut the negative stigma and perceptions about the dwellings, not only the dwellings, but also the people that reside in the housing. It is my eternal belief the work that we do at the Housing Council and at the agency gives low-income families and individuals hope and faith that with a hand up, not a hand out, they can succeed, and it starts with a place they can call home. This is the reason why the State Housing Council is vitally important. The council is actively working to understand both its current and proposed responsibilities, as well as to work more collaboratively with other advisory bodies, such as CAPO. As Margaret mentioned, Mike Philman, CAPO member and fellow council member, is here with us and will be sharing remarks on behalf of CAPO. We recently had a joint Housing Council and CAPO meeting in January to discuss the state of homelessness in Oregon, as well as to begin discussions around strategies for the application of the governor's proposed $100 million homeless families initiative. There are plans to hold several more of these joint meetings this spring. This leads me to the purpose of why we're here today, and that's to discuss the proposed governor's bill, HB 2442. The goal of HB 2442 is to give the council, if passed, newly named the Housing Stability Council, greater authority and agency oversight, particularly as it pertains to providing policy direction across agency programs and a more active and engaged role in fiscal management and financial budgeting, as well as a better, greater levels of engagement in the issues so pressing across all areas of the state. The name change is symbolic. It is not just housing, but housing stability that we're charged with as our, is a better representation of overarching mission and vision of the Housing Council and Oregon Housing, and that is to provide housing stability, which is not possible without the wraparound services provided by the many social organizations such as the community action agencies, coordinated care organizations, and other local agencies. For it is these programs that allow individuals and families to improve their physical, social, and financial well-being with the goal of progression through the housing continuum from low-income housing to market rate and hopefully to eventually home ownership. The proposed changes will also inject a spirit of collaboration and thrive on the collective efforts across state government to achieve the interconnected policy objectives and state priorities. Those of us in the housing arena wrestle with a number of issues. Some were touched on earlier today, such as lack of adequate supply, land cost, the increasing cost of building materials, and, of course, the lack of soft funding. To this end, I'd like to close with, we believe the proposed changes will lead to a more effective and engaged council, better oversight and direction for the agency, and more engagement with partners. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much for your service.
Thank you.
On the committee, commission.
Actually, one quick point on the bill. So, Margaret, we talked about in my office, there is an amendment coming. There was a housing bill similar but different that I submitted on behalf
Correct.
Of some of the advocates. So are we still considering that we're going to wrap some of that into this? And then I will add one more layer for you, is that, you know, speaking out in the hall for a second with some PGE folks, they've got a little bit of question on some of the new governance structure that's kind of
energy
outlined in here. So hopefully we can solve all of those questions in some kind of amendment to this so that we really get a nice robust bill that everyone's bought into. So.
Yeah. Madam Chair and Representative Parrish, the amendments that I mentioned, the Dash 2 amendments, I believe cover, reconcile the substantive parts of the other bill that you, you're sponsoring. And you're going to hear from Oregon Opportunity Network folks who had done the work on that bill. And so it's my belief that we're all squared up on that. But if not, then we'll want to dig into that. We are aware that the energy folks have some interest. We believe, you know, clearly we'll work with them. I think that the structure we're imagining will satisfy what they're interested in, but we'll make sure of that. And so thank you for bringing that to my attention. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Great. So next up, John Miller, Martha McLenna, and Michael Fieldman.
Well, Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee, thank you for inviting us today. I'm John Miller. I'm Executive Director of Oregon Opportunity Network. OregonOn is a statewide association of housing nonprofits, housing authorities, and community action agencies. And we provide training and advocacy to the industry with the goal of helping it be more effective and more sustainable. And so thank you very much for the opportunity to testify on HB 2442 today as amended. And I say as amended because the amendments do contain most of the issues that we had brought up in our other bill. So as background, throughout 2013, OregonOn partnered with Oregon Housing and Community Services in their process to explore redesign of the agency. And in fact, initially our charge was to help OHCS figure out a new way to exist, because initially the it had been contemplated that it would be disbanded. And so with that call to action, our members really mobilized around that and came together quite a bit. We did several things throughout that process, and it was really a partnership with OHCS that we went on. We developed some guiding principles. We convened many stakeholder focus groups throughout the year. We helped organize a day-long summit here in Salem that we participated with many folks, including CAPO and others. We participated on subject area work groups, and we helped inform the eventual recommendations. We consistently focused on the need to establish a new housing commission. So once it was determined that the department wasn't actually going to go away, we were quite relieved. But we also recognized that there was good opportunity for improvement. And one of the things that really emerged was a very strong housing council. And so that's one of the things that we've been pushing for quite a while. We stress that the governing body for the agency has to provide appropriate fiduciary oversight. We want to ensure that our state housing agency never again finds itself in an unsustainable business model, which led to the governor's initial comments about perhaps this agency isn't sustainable. We all know that housing is a key determinant of health and prosperity, and the system transformations currently underway in other parts of the state will only reach their full potential to improve the lives of Oregonians if housing is integrated with statewide policy, and if housing is recognized as absolutely fundamental to achieving our goals around healthcare, education, and economic development. Everyone needs a home to be successful. Home is truly foundation to success in all those other areas. Regarding the council, to be effective, we believe the state's housing commission or council should have authority to set housing and community services policy for the state, with a clear linkage to other state agencies and systems. We also believe that policies based on shared outcomes and focused, we support policies based on shared outcomes and focus on how programs help low-income Oregonians become stable, successful, and healthy. We believe that the commission should have fiduciary responsibility for the agency's entrepreneurial business model, including a primary role in developing and monitoring the agency's budget. And also, the council should have expertise from the continuum from homelessness to home ownership. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Martha McLennan.
Thank you. I'm Martha McLennan. I'm the Executive Director of Northwest Housing Alternatives and a member of the Oregon Opportunity Network Board. So thank you, Chair Kenny Geyer and members of the committee for having us here today. We did begin pre-session looking at another bill, which was House Bill 2376. It had sponsorship from our chair here and Representative Parrish and others, and we thank you for that support. When we saw the two bills together, we decided that the best path would be to try and find a single bill for the committee to move forward, for the legislature to move forward. So we've worked with Oregon Housing and Community Services staff to incorporate amendments, concepts from our bill into House Bill 2442. This has been a really positive process. We appreciate the staff's willingness to amend their bill. So we are here today in support of 2442. The dash one and dash two amendments do address a lot of the concerns that we had. It does give the council a role in fiduciary oversight. It does call for membership to be diverse, both geographically and with respect to their expertise. And also discusses fills out a description of a state housing plan that we think will be a good policy guidance going forward. So a couple of comments. As John mentioned, we are really, because the state agency has an entrepreneurial business model, it has over its more than 30 years, I think, now, existence, relied on fees and revenues that it earns in administering a variety of programs to pay for most of its operating expenses. With the recession, that business model came under a great deal of stress, and we think it's critically important to have an independent body that is monitoring that and reporting the status of that business model to the legislature on a regular basis. So we're very excited about that. The language in the bill could be interpreted very narrowly or very broadly. We hope that it will be the committee and the legislature intent that that be a very broad charge. In terms of the membership of the council, we had proposed in our bill a membership of up to 13 members. This bill has a maximum of 9. We are concerned a little bit with 9 as the membership. We think that the tasks before this committee represent a really significant workload and feel like a slightly larger group might be better able to have subcommittees to take on some of the tasks that are assigned. That's just a suggestion. And then the housing plan, I think, is a very important piece. It gives a council a role of that. It ensures that that planning process will be public and that that planning process will include reports to the legislature. So with that, we, again, are here in support of 2442 and look forward to working with the new council and with the legislature going forward to address the housing problems in Oregon.
Thank you.
Chair Kenny Geyer and Vice Chairs Peluso and Stark, good to see you again. We just met earlier. So, and members of the committee, my name is Michael Fieldman, and I want to thank you, first of all, for the opportunity to speak to you today in favor of the restructuring of Oregon Housing
yes.
Community Service
yeah.
as published in HB.
Yeah, we just move it away
from your
mouth a little bit.
Okay, thank
Perfect.
You. As prescribed in HB 2442 with the dash two amendments, along with a few expected technical refinements that OHCS has already agreed to. So I'm the executive director of the United Community Action Network, or UCAN, and UCAN is the community action agency that serves both Douglas and Josephine counties in the southern part of the state. I also have the unique position, I think, of being on both the State Housing Council that advises OHCS on housing issues, and that Aubrey's the chair of, and also, but also being a member and past president of the Community Action Partnership of Oregon, or CAPO, the state association for the Oregon's 19 community action agencies serving all of Oregon counties. So today, I'm here representing CAPO. That's the old hat I'm wearing. In doing our work, we partner closely with OHCS. OHCS administers federal and state funds that our agencies use to provide many of our services. Statutorily, actually, CAPO is charged with the role of advising OHCS on these programs. It's also charged with advising OHCS on issues of poverty in our communities, as well as low-income energy needs and homelessness. This role has been in place since OHCS's inception, so it's been around for a long time. Having CAPO in this role, I think, has served OHCS in the state of Oregon and low-income Oregonians well, as it's provided local input to OHCS as it develops state plans, ORS rules, and other administrative duties. It has helped to make services effective, efficient, and delivered in a coordinated manner around the state. HB 2442 was the result of an extensive review process of OHCS and its operations, including looking at all of its advisory boards as well as its overall missions, as John detailed. I was an active participant in that process, and I actually want to give OHCS Director Van Vliet kudos for the time and the effort and the quality of that endeavor. It was inclusive, it was transparent, it was professional and thorough in its execution. I think it's led to a good draft document. CAPO was also very engaged in the reorganization process. Because of our statutory relationships with OHCS and the positive role it has played in assuring quality services over the years, it was really important for us that this key input mechanism be maintained. This legislation not only maintains this mechanism, but I think it also enhances it. It sort of resets several statutorily prescribed groups that provide advice on individual programs in favor of two advisory bodies that will work collaboratively to align systems within the agency and improve service delivery. In addition, the agency is committed to a more flexible method of gathering specific feedback by creating subcommittees to inform the Housing Stability Council and the agency as needed. We think that this will enhance existing advisory roles and streamline the agency's ability to seek and receive meaningful feedback on state and local needs. It strengthens the partnership between the networks of folks providing critical services on the ground, like our community action agencies, and the state agency that administers those programs. It creates an integrated governance structure that will serve the state and Oregonians well, I think. So finally, and perhaps most important in this reorganization, OHCS has refocused its mission on one of housing stability. With this change, it makes a shift from having two separate departments of housing and of community services, which traditionally it's had, to having a unified focus on stabilizing low-income families. With this mission change and with the advisory structure change, CAPO will be able to work more closely with what is now the Housing Council to provide for better integration of housing and direct services that is informed by real-world experience. This is a goal we have striven for since OHCS's inception, and with this legislation, this goal seems a lot closer at hand. So just in summary, CAPOs is supportive of the OHCS restructure with the -2 amendments and the expected technical changes, and I want to thank you again for the opportunity to testify, and if you have any questions, be glad to answer.
Great, thank you. Questions?
Yes.
Yes.
When do I get to see a chart? That's a for
I think
not seen the original chart. It was
the spaghetti chart. Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
It'll be more clear.
Right,
time.
Right.
Yeah.
So, for those who weren't here 2 years ago, Director Van Vliet showed a chart that was so complicated. You know, with lots of different advisory committees, and so this is really paring it down. And
yes,
you will still have subcommittees, we recognize, but
right,
at least there's more of a, you know, fewer points of accountability within that. So that's been tremendous cooperation among all of you. I applaud you. I have two questions. One is, could you tell everyone who is a part of the Oregon Opportunity Network some of the different kinds of agencies that are part of your network?
Sure. So around the stage, UCAN is, mm-hmm, is a member. In the Portland area, we have 19 members, and around the state, we have another 20 or 31 members, excuse me. Most of our members are affordable housing nonprofits, housing authorities, and community action agencies, and they pretty much follow the I-5 corridor, which sort of follows the population center. So we do have a few members over at the Oregon coast. We also have members east
of the Cascades, one of some out in La Grande and some in Central Oregon. But most of these, they do a variety of different services, from owning and operating affordable housing, but also homeownership counseling and education, foreclosure prevention services, asset building services. Homeless services as well. Thank you. So it really runs the full continuum of housing, from homelessness to homeownership, and everything that folks need to get from one point to the next along the way. Thank you.
And also for clarification, I see your coalition of members is also a part of the one that Janet Bird runs, the Community Housing Alliance.
That's correct.
Which consists of the nonprofits like you, as well as home builders and others, right? So there's two different coalitions. Janet's is the overriding.
That's right.
And you're a coalition.
Yes.
A member of hers.
Yeah, Housing Alliance is a broader coalition.
Right.
Has other members, as you mentioned, some cities,
developers.
Some developers, but also local jurisdictions. Some local jurisdictions belong. Also unions, mm-hmm. And other groups are members as well.
Okay.
So it's just a broader effort, but we certainly are right there with their agenda as well.
Yeah. Thank you. Representative Gallegos.
Yeah, I just want to repeat what I said earlier, that I'm really pleased to see the product of collaborative work that you all have done, and I think it's just a source of hope. So thank you.
Yep.
Welcome.
I totally agree, and I have a remaining question about the name. It's going from Housing Council to Housing Stability Council. The one that you had recommended in your bill was Housing Commission. Is everyone starting to gather steam around the Housing Stability Council? Is that discussed? You have bigger substantive issues, but
I don't think we focused a whole lot on the naming process.
Yeah, I think we're okay either way. It's the function that is most critical.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, one question.
Yes, Representative Giller.
Thank you, Chair. Do you have... always like when you're reorganizing things and having a new strategic plan to also have success metrics. Do you have those in your plan? If so, could you just give me some examples?
I think those would be metrics of the agency.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably a work in progress.
I'll bring her up afterwards.
Okay.
So. Because we have two more people to testify and they may raise issues that you may want to address too, then we'll save you for last. So keep that question in mind. Great question. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So now I call on Philip Kennedy Wong and Patty Whitney Wise, who both have hyphenated names and work very closely together for different agencies.
Thank you very much, Chair and members of the committee. Patty Whitney Wise. I'm the Director for Partners for Hunger Free Oregon, and we also staff the Oregon Hunger Task Force. And I just wanted to tell you a brief bit about the Oregon Hunger Task Force. It's been around since 1989, created by the legislature, has legislators, state agencies, and nonprofits on board. And over the years, we've leveraged millions of dollars in federal funds coming into the state to feed people, as well as increased communication and collaboration between state agencies and nonprofits. Two quick examples. One is when the Senior Farm Direct program was created at the national level. We had the right people at the table to quickly turn around an application and become one of the pilot states for that project, which continues today. Same thing with the after-school meal and snack program on the other end of the life spectrum for kids in after-school programs. We were able to get an application in early and become one of the pilot programs in the country.
Can I just interrupt you and ask, do you know how much in federal funds that's been bringing in?
So I'd have to really multiply quick in my head, but I think I can safely say in terms of the Senior Farm Direct, we've brought in over $10 million over the last few years, probably more than that. I'm being conservative. with the after-school meal and snack program. It's now a nationwide program, so all states can participate. But again, I would put that in the millions of dollars. And there are many other examples I could give. I'd love to come back at some point when you have more time and talk a little bit more about the work of the task force and some of our recommendations for the future as well. I want to say that in terms of this bill, we are very much in support of moving the task force along with the Oregon Hunger Response Fund over to the Department of Human Services. We do have some concerns with some of the language in the edits or the amendments that are currently in the bill, but we are meeting tomorrow morning with both Oregon Housing and Community Services and the Department of Human Services and the Oregon Food Bank, who's a member of the task force, will be there as well. And I'm confident that we'll be able to work out amendments that are acceptable to everyone. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you.
Good afternoon. For the record, Philip Kennedy Wong, Oregon Food Bank. I want to first begin by actually thanking the department for actually, evolving, the anti-hunger community early on in the process, because the Oregon Hunger Response Fund, and not just that, but the federal farm, bill, food commodities that we get, has all happened coordinated for many years with the Housing and Community Services Agency. And naturally, when there was discussion about transferring these programs to another agency, a lot of folks all over the state got nervous. And to the credit of Director Van Vliet, she's bent over backwards and met with us, so we definitely appreciate that. With respect to the Hunger Task Force, I've been a member in two different capacities, first as a member of faith-based community several years ago, and now as a member of the Oregon Food Bank, which, as you look at the legislation and statute, is a statutory member of the task force. And I concur with, my colleague here, Patty, that we'd love to continue to work with the agency or agencies now on language that makes sense for where we are at today with respect to hunger. And a great example of that is I'm actually looking at a copy of the bill, and it said that Oregon will rank among the top 10 states in providing food security without hunger by 2015, and obviously we are in the state in the year of 2015. So thank you very much for this opportunity to testify before you today.
Thank you. Questions? Well, it's great to see the spirit of collaboration continue. We'll look forward to those amendments. Margaret, would you like to come back up? Any other?
Thank you.
Yep, thank you so much.
So if you're wondering, we Oregon's 36.
Oh.
Madam Chair and Representative Bueller, thank you for the question, and thank you for giving this time and attention today.
And for the record.
For the record, I am Margaret Van Vliet, Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services. I just want to make a quick note about the folks who were just here, Patty and Philip, very good partners. Obviously, we care very much about the issues of food security and hunger policy and all of that. It felt like in the whole redesign that the implementation of programs would be better served by the agency that had the bigger sort of suite of programs to address that. And so in the sort of aligning, we need to get housing policy right. It felt like the eventual transfer was the right thing to do, so that we can focus on the very complicated housing pieces. So just a quick note about that, and I do appreciate their good partnership. In answer to the question about kind of do we have metrics and outcomes and things, we have taken baby steps. So I'd be happy to brief you individually or any members of the committee, of course. And we did develop a fairly internally facing strategic plan that is a 3-year plan that will help internalize and really refocus the agency internally, and that's a big lift for us. And so we have outlined 5 strategic imperatives and have mapped out 1- and 3-year objectives and activities in pursuit of those things. The one that I think is most relevant of those 5 strategic imperatives is we want to become data and research driven. We have not been. We get dribs and drabs of data from different sources. We track different kind of outputs, if you will, from the programs, but it's not integrated, it's not intentional. And so we think if we're going to be the agency that we aspire to be, we have to become much more data and research driven. That's a journey of changing culture and thinking differently about how you spend money on things like IT, which is not a thing I'm going to do right now. And in turn, I feel really clear that good data and research can help guide policy, this new policy body that we're really hoping to be able to support to guide us in our work. And then I think eventually, then hopefully that all works into a 1 and 5 year strategic housing plan for the state. We've not operated with one for many years. So we have a long way to go to get to the, I think, the kind of outcomes and metrics that we'd all like to see, like not just how many units got built or how many heat bills got paid, but how many families moved up in terms of their economic security? How many people were able to leave deeply assisted housing and move into something that was more independent? And so I'm very committed to that, but there's a lot of internal work to do to get us ready for that. So I'd love to come back and continue engaging that with you.
Just a follow-up.
Yep, follow-up.
Can you share with us your 5 strategic imperatives?
Absolutely. So Chair Kenny Geyer and Representative Bueller, the 5 strategic imperatives in no particular order are, again, to be data, become data and research driven, to redesign policy and governance, which this bill today, of course, takes us a big step forward.
Made a good
forward.
Step there, yeah.
To deliver remarkable service, and I'll come back to that in a minute, to increase leadership skills at all levels within the agency. So again, that's a very sort of internally facing question of culture, and then improve fiscal sustainability, so to become a fiscally sustainable agency. And so the service one is an interesting one that, I could talk all day about all of these, and I won't, but to say a word about the service one, we really see that there's an opportunity for us to be much more of a facilitator of the local action on the ground. And you heard from a few of our key partners today. They're the experts. They do the work. They're the landlords. They're the service providers. We don't do any direct service delivery. So it's incumbent on us to make it as easy as possible for them to do their good work. And so it's about change. So service is much more than sort of traditional customer service. It's really about changing the nature of our relationship with our community-based partners. And so I just thought I'd take the opportunity to sort of underscore that, given what you've heard from just a handful of our key partners today. So,
thank you. And how often are you going to measure your progress to achieving these strategic imperatives?
Chair Kenny Geyer and Representative Bueller, right now, as a kind of a leadership team internally, we're certainly keeping close track of the activities. But I would share with you that they're not outcomes yet, because it's really about process change internally and changing activities. Everything from how we do grant management reporting, how we think about holding managers and employees accountable to their work. It's really baseline sort of infrastructure work. Mm-hmm. So we're tracking it very closely monthly, but I don't have externally facing sort of outcomes to report yet.
Sure, and I understand that when you're trying to transform something, it'll take a while, but you could track your process improvement, right?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Good. Anyone else? All right.
Okay.
Well, with that, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2442. If there are no more comments, we may actually leave early today. So our next meeting will take place on Monday, February 16th, and we will have a public hearing on House Bill 2547 and work sessions on House Bill 2091, House Bill 2113, and House Bill 2115. We will also send House Bill 2114 back to the clerk for re-referral. Are we going to hear public 2116 as well?
Nope, it hasn't been referred.
Okay. Any other announcements?
Ready.
All right, then I adjourn our committee. Just say the whole name. Adjourn our committee.